Okay, so we're back. Is this episode, was it 159 or 160?
I believe, Tim, we are at 160.
160, okay. Well, tonight we're going to spend some time on Dr. Anthony Fauci. Before we get into him, there's some interesting stories this week. There is a incident out in Utah, school hearing dismissed after angry parents pack room without masks. Tension flared at a public hearing in Utah over the state's mask mandate for school children after several parents defied orders by packing the room without face coverings. Oh, Lord. The parents, some of whom carried signs condemning face masks, failed to sit in the marked seats and booed at the Utah County officials Wednesday night. The hearing was held over a letter by Utah County Commissioner Bill Lee, which asked Governor Gary Herbert to waive his requirement kindergarten to 12th grade students to wear a mask when school opens. Really, they expect kindergartners to keep masks on all day? Whatever. Utah County Commissioner Tanny Ainge has opposed the letter citing safety for the students, of course, and admonished the crowd for blatantly putting everyone in the hearing room at risk for not wearing masks or socially distancing. This is the exact opposite of what we need to be doing, Ainge told the crowd before he was booed. That's interesting. Oh, Tanner Ainge. Okay, Tanner. Tanner's a man. It's probably Mormon. They have names like that. It's probably Utah, so he's probably Mormon. The hearing held in Provo, Utah, was postponed by a 2-1 vote, which triggered more boos and angry calls from the mask mandate's opponents. Utah's seen a jump in coronavirus cases. Of course, that's positive test results in the last few weeks, with 21,639 new cases reported since June 1st, according to the state's health department. That's according to the state's health department. Of course, we have to remember that the various state health departments have been caught fraudulently boosting the number of cases by combining both PCR tests, positive PCR tests, and antibody tests, both of which are not reliable. The state saw an average of 481 cases a day during that period, with the same day seeing a record number of new cases. On July 9th, 868 Utah residents contracted COVID-19, according to the health department. That means they tested positive for an RNA sequence, which may be COVID. That's how these tests are. As of July 6th, there have been 234 deaths in the state due to the virus, the health department said, so that between January and July 16th, there have been 234 deaths in the state. For that, they're shutting the entire state down, more or less. Despite the rising cases, some parents question the need for masks for their kids. Interesting. In Georgia, the Georgia governor suspends all local mask mandates, encourages, but doesn't require masks for residents. So Georgia Governor Brian Kemp announced Thursday he is suing Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms over the city's mask mandate, claiming the measures violate his emergency orders. The lawsuit is on behalf of the Atlanta business owners and their hardworking employees who are struggling to survive during these difficult times, Kemp tweeted. These men and women are doing their best to put food on the table for their families while local elected officials shutter businesses, undermine economic growth. At least he's placing some emphasis on the economic damage, because that's the true toll right there, because that's a humanitarian crisis. The lawsuit marks a stunning escalation in the brewing feud between Kemp and Bottoms after Atlanta mayor introduced her mandatory mask ordinance. Under the mayor's orders, not wearing a mask within Atlanta city limits was punishable by a fine, even to 6 months in jail. Now, I wonder if they socially distance you in jail, put you in jail for not wearing a mask. The governor's office has encouraged that Bottoms' order is not legally enforceable, pointing to Kemp's executive order limiting local action to being less restrictive than state measures. I wonder if you get a court hearing for that, because would that ordinance pass judicial muster? I mean, is your scrutiny, rather? I mean, just because the mayor wants to put you in jail? I mean,
well, any laws passed? Is there even a court system left? I mean, you have these dictates and mandates, yeah. and it's just basically all authority of government has been taken over by whichever little, you know, potentate is sitting on top of you. But yeah, there is no process. There's no constitution left.
Juries can't meet because juries can't socially distance, right? So how do you have a criminal hearing? So, Yes. So under the executive order, the Republican governor extended the state's public emergency and said face coverings are strongly encouraged but not required. Kemp's executive order avoids mask mandates imposed by some local governments as COVID-19 cases tick up. There's again, cases are ticking up. They're going up. Yeah, because they keep testing. Even as Kemp has been resistant to a statewide mask mandate for Georgia, other Republican governors are now requiring face coverings in their states. Again, there's no mention in federal, I mean, sorry, in their constitutions, in their powers to actually order these things other than vague public health, measures. Kemp's previous executive orders prohibited local action from being more restrictive than the state's requirements, but Wednesday's order especially mentioned facial coverings and mask mandates. Savannah residents beginning July 1st were required to wear a face covering in public or face a fine up to $500. In a CNN interview early this month, Johnson said because the city was hitting new daily records for coronavirus cases, it was really necessary for us to take more drastic action to protect our city. Remember back in April and May, it was all about deaths, right? And there was, but the hospitals being overwhelmed. And we kind of, I think we touched on this back then and said when they couldn't really provide the bodies, the death and the deaths, they would talk about tests
No, we
and
flat out predicted it.
yeah.
We said this was going to happen because we could see, anyone can see if the looking at just the actual CDC data that they were going to run out of dead bodies.
Yeah.
Just to, I mean, I'll give you here's some numbers that I think will
Yeah,
help illustrate your point.
they've killed all the old people.
Yeah, I mean, like you had 3,000 deaths in the week of the 28th of March, and then you went up to supposedly the high of 17,000. That was April 18th. Well, last week it was 1,099. Now, I'll just digress for a second, point out that this is the COVID deaths that the CDC registers as a number, which then becomes the headline in newspapers.
Yes.
What they don't tell you is that that number includes deaths involving COVID and pneumonia, or deaths involving COVID and the flu. And if you look at these deaths, they're about half of what the number is for the COVID number, which we'd reduce if you're just asking for, well, who actually died of just COVID? It'd be like, say, 600, 500 people, of which, of course, statistics would tell you that 90 to 95% are comorbid. So
Yeah.
now you're down to basically 50 people, 100 people, perhaps in a nation of 330 million, that can be claimed to have died from COVID. So at this point, the flatten the curve, the pandemic storyline has simply collapsed. I mean, there isn't, I mean, what, how can they use these numbers to try to justify it? And so it's strictly a psychological fear training exercise where, as you said, they have now increased the testing so much that you have this dramatic spike in case numbers, which they can then use as the example. And I'm going to say one other thing. I talked to a doctor here, and I asked him about this. He said that there is a very strong, what he called, reverse placebo effect. In other words, there's so much fear of COVID. If you are one of the people who are tested and then you are notified that you're positive, you become immediately sick. You're just as sick as can be, and you go right into the hospital sometimes. If you're one of these individuals who are like kind of hypochondriac, you will you when you're told that you have COVID, what happens to you? You go, oh my God, I'm dying. And so this then increases the number of hospitalizations, right? So that number goes up too. It is related to the number of cases that they have because you have this large fraction of the reverse placebo where it's just panic and hysteria. The death number is the best, but even that, as we noted, is fake in itself, but it is the better number because at least you have a body. But that number is down from the 17,000 that they hit in the April 18th now to like, a thousand.
Yeah, so
So,
it's more than there's been a more than a 90% drop off in official COVID deaths
and official COVID,
since
yeah, this is
April.
reading off of the CDC website. That's where the numbers are coming from.
Yet that they're doubling down on the personal restrictions with the mask wearing, which is again, which is to me, it's ritualistic public humiliation or slave training.
Yeah, but it also, and you pointed this out, and I think this is actually the very best explanation of it. what the mass does is it informs people of the reality of the COVID storyline. Because if everyone is wearing a mask, then it creates the sense of it's real. I mean, I know they talk about the symbolism, the slave training, which, I had talked about earlier, but I think your explanation of when everyone sees people wearing masks, that this just reinforces the unconscious idea that COVID is real and
Yeah,
it's threatening.
it's the effect proving the cause, and that's the same reason why you had them shut down, sports ball, NCAA tournament, Major League Baseball, concerts. They can't have people gathering together. You can't. Basically, with the continuation of these mask mandates and social distancing and capacity restrictions, is they have suspended the right to a peaceful assembly and the right to practice religion. To your religion, it's a suspension of the First Amendment, regardless of what the Supreme Court says. They're a joke.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to also note this piece of work, James Kenney, the mayor of Philadelphia. I don't know if you saw his statement last week, but he said that he would not prosecute any of the people who had been arrested during the Black Lives Matter protests, and his ban on public gatherings would not apply to protests.
Yes, that was another thing. Is when they started saying that, when there's a public health experts said that the since racism is a more serious public health matter than COVID, that's okay to protest or riot or assemble and gather together and protest on behalf of Black Lives Matter or whatever. So basically, your politics matters in whether you can gather or not. So if you're gathering, and of course, Philadelphia has the DA there, Krasner, who's one we talked about this last week, who's one of dozens of officials, sheriffs and DAs, dozens who have been elected, who've gotten money from George Soros.
He is as dirty as they come. And this is a really dangerous situation for so-called white people in Philadelphia, because basically, I mean, when the mayor says that he's not going to enforce any of the infractions that they were arrested for, I mean, some of them was not just like physical destruction of property, is violence.
Yes, it's a green light for more violence, yeah.
So in other words, this is sort of like the people, the Black Lives Matter and Antifa, who are basically one continuous, flow. I mean, they'll hear this and go, great. And then, of course, if you go on Facebook, which I'm trying to stop looking at because it's mind control madness, but they are really amping up the black on white violence videos. There's just tons of them out there, and I think it's all. I mean, basically, you're getting a situation. It's sort of like the autonomous zone where the political power is changing from basically white people. To their replacements, and it turns out the political class, like you say, is actually not as we thought. They are of a different structure. They're being either manipulated or, in fact, they're lifetime actors who are basically there just to usher in the autonomous zone for all of these former economic hubs like Philadelphia, New York, Seattle. I mean, these cities are like ghost towns now. You've seen the videos. It's just incredible. And so this creates, the first thing, in my opinion, has to be recognized is how dangerous the situation is for whites and white families. Because you're not going to have a return of the economy. I think a lot of them are kind of, I know in Manhattan, 500,000, I've heard it's even more, have left. And I think about a third of them have tried to move into my block here in Santa Barbara. I mean, we've got so many of these guys, they show up with like moving vans looking for a house.
Or that they'll go up to like I don't know, to Maine and ruin that state.
I mean, but I'm serious. I mean, the property value of the enclave properties is just through the roof. I mean, if you've got a place that doesn't have any of the urban crime, right? This is the buzzword. They want that. They want to live there because they know that they are sensing what's going on in the cities, and it isn't going to get better. It's going to get worse. So, my point is, if you're in one of these areas, you've got to come up with a plan, because the more of these of the kind of the money class that leave, it just keeps reducing down both the economy and just the actual fraction of people who are even, you know, on your side. And so you have to consider that you could be in a situation like where Philadelphia just becomes the autonomous zone. And if you looked at the murders and rapes that were going on in that place, you know, as I mentioned, I had an individual go through it and actually give a real time description. I mean, it was just, it wasn't a place that you could have a family. I mean,
you can't maintain the culture. And it's a lot of people, you know, it's a lot of people say culture drives politics, but economics drives the culture. And if you undermine the economic basis for the culture, you can destroy it. They're doing that by, you know, creating an environment which is penalizes, you know, lawful productive behavior, and you undermine the economic basis for the, you know, for, you know, the middle class. You're not going to have middle class values and the political stability that derives from that.
You know, I think it's so dangerous. In my opinion, I think, I mean, I'm not optimistic about these cities and their future. I think there's going to be lots of violence inside of them. And I think that if you're inside one of them, you need to look for basically a stronghold to move to, for example, the state of Georgia, where you have a political individual who is, you know, basically still in touch with the Constitution.
What's happening down there is, you know, they're trying to corner him with these test results and the bad press, you know, because they're saying just the governor refuses a mandate, he's going to be responsible for a spike in tests and a spike in infections and these things. But they don't really, these actually don't mean anything because, first of all, everyone's asymptomatic anyway. Until the, you know, next winter comes around and people get sick again, so they'll be able to cite that. But basically, I mean, this was Kemp was also the governor who was the last to close down the state and the first to open it up. And of course, he was criticized then as saying, you're going to cause, there's going to be an explosion in deaths. And there wasn't in Georgia. Now they're trying to cite these test results. But it's a strategy to defeat the governor and also to defeat that agenda to try to reopen the economy. Because what they're trying to do is create a situation where any politician who dares to buck the artificial COVID consensus or narrative, you know, is going to be targeted by the media and blamed. And with bigger
any
case
country like Sweden, which of course has now basically come through the whole COVID hallucination and is completely on the other side. And just getting back to Georgia for a second, in the case of Georgia, the death rate or the deaths from COVID has tracked down at the same time that the cases have gone up.
Yeah, so what does that mean?
Well, it means that the disease is not, as we're being told, that it is not a killer of
civilization. Well, at some point, people have to stop submitting to tests. That's convince themselves, even if they're feeling
ill. They use the test number to, you know, continue the lockdown. And that's just and by giving more tests, they're just able to create a higher and higher number. But the death rate, and this is why Georgia is so important, is because the death rates have continued to track down to the whole his freeing of the economy. And so this just shows that what you're doing is you're detecting the so-called killer in populations that don't have fatalities from it.
Yeah. Well, now, it was acknowledged and it is accepted that neither the PCR test or the antibody test is reliable. There's as much as 80% false positive. That doesn't account the viral load. The antibody test just shows that you've had a reaction to something similar to COVID relatively recent.
The whole thing is completely ridiculous.
Yes.
I mean, let me tell you something. Here is one of the more comical aspects of COVID is that the median death age is 78. Mm-hmm. Now that is fascinating because that is also the median death age of the overall population of the United States.
Yes. And
if you look under 20, there are no fatalities. So in other words, if you compared this to like the Spanish flu, you'd see that the young people were really getting hammered. There was a tremendous burden of death in young people with this pandemic. Because it's a disease, right?
And yet they're closing schools, and they've done studies. There,
each student you have a perfect overlap to just the natural mortality.
Yes, and you know, each student
which would be a statistical reality of something which doesn't exist. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
If you just subtract COVID out of existence, say, well, it does. What if it doesn't exist? What would be the, you know, I mean, you would have no difference whatsoever in how the deaths in the bell curve in the United States would be laid out. So the one thing that, these data, suggest is, well, it doesn't exist at all.
Yeah, I mean, each student has a more likely chance of being killed in a car accident on his way to school than they do from dying from COVID. I mean,
Yeah, of
so.
course. I mean, it's because it's a, it's one in it's one in like what under 21. There's just, gosh, I mean, it's like one in 25,000 or something. Interesting, like how fear operates. There's an kind of a an, like an example that happened to me with a chiropractor, and I was talking to him, and he said, "Well, we had one from our own family, because I was saying, hey, this whole thing is ridiculous. We should be rioting, and just shouldn't be putting up with it." He goes, "Well, in our family, in the chiropractic family, we had an individual who didn't feel well. He went home and no one heard from him. And then 2 weeks later, they found him and he was dead. And we strongly think it was COVID." And I said, "Well, I strongly feel it wasn't, because he's 47. He had no known comorbidity. I'm afraid if you look at statistics, this would be, oh, like one in 5,000 people who have COVID in that range group would actually be fatal. And of course, there's a really good chance that he actually had some other cause, let's say like one in 10. So what you're presenting as a realistic possibility is literally something on the order of one in 50,000. And yet you are afraid. You are afraid, and your behavior is changing from something that, if you just work the statistics, would be completely clear that this is just stupid. I mean, the idea that this would be the first thing that came to mind is the guy died of COVID and no one was there to help him. I mean, it's just preposterous. But this is what's going on. They've been successful at spinning our mind with the fear porn.
Well, it's very easy to do. I mean, especially with this test, is you just keep performing more unreliable tests that yield false positives. You do more eyeball diagnoses, which they're doing a lot. Then you arbitrarily add COVID to more patient files, and then you ascribe any symptoms, respiratory problems, flu-like symptoms, to COVID, and then disparage any appeals to personal liberty as a threat to public safety because
Except,
there's COVID.
okay, I'm gonna. This
I
is
mean.
like here was the Atwell cure for COVID. It's somewhat exaggerated, but it's close enough to the truth to be able to mention. So I have a friend, and he had a temperature, and he went in and got tested for COVID, and he was just absolutely, just wiped. He was just devastated. He was like literally home, getting his will together and things, he knew I was kind of into COVID, and because he called me up, and I said, "Peter, you're not sick. You're not." And he goes, "What?" He goes, "No, I tested." I go, "No, you're not sick. You're just not sick. Stop it. You're not sick." And I said, "I'm going to call you in 2 days, and if you don't have a high temperature, you are going to admit you're not sick." And so he calls up the next day, and he goes, "My temperature's gone. So I guess I can signs and wonders, buddy." But you see, my point
Well,
is,
you could like have a cable TV show called like the COVID Whisperer or something. You could
yeah, I could be
cure people
I
with
can
your voice.
like laying hands on. Because the point is, I mean, and you see, the placebo effect is very powerful. If you think you're sick, you're going to be sick. So I just told him I would slap him around if he pretended to be sick. I was just sick of him being a coward and a wimp. It was like the scene from The Godfather. Be
a
just stop
man.
it. Be a
Be a
man.
man.
Don't be a wimp.
Slap them. That's how I feel like doing people with masks on. Be a man and slap their
Be
masks
a
over their
man.
face.
It's just because, and this is actually, I mean, one of the only kinds of communications you can have with normies, because they are, first of all, they're thought puppets to begin with, and now they are frightened, terrified thought puppets. I mean, how do you actually, what I mean? It's just, where are the conversational openings? So that's how I dealt with it. I just told him, no, listen to me. I'm guaranteeing you're not sick. You're not going to be sick. In a week, you're going to be fine. So anyway, and in fact, he had a complete recovery, and now he's trying to, anyway, he's leading a normal life.
Well, I mean,
So
that's probably,
one for one, Jim.
I mean, something happened like in these nursing homes in New York and New Jersey, where Cuomo engineered these deaths because he set up a situation where we're now, did he bring in COVID patients into these nursing homes, then he isolated them kept them away from their families. And, you know, one of the big things in these nursing homes, or the tether these people have to life, is the visits they get and the support they get from family. Not only do they, you know, build up their spirits when they get visits and help them out and see what they need, they also make sure they're not being neglected. And
absolutely.
So,
I mean, the COVID death count in April, that is one of the great scandals in our history, where you know, where the Eastern governors demanded that they take in, it wasn't just COVID, but infectious diseases.
Yeah.
I mean, because I mean, remember, COVID is kind of not real, but the flu and pneumonia is. And you have these are the poorest retirement homes imaginable. You can just think what the conditions are like. They would never permit someone with pneumonia or the flu to enter into one of these buildings, right? They know what happened. Of course they do. But they were forced to do it because of the power of the government. And these are state agencies, you know, the hospitals, the retirement homes were run by the state. They had to do it. And they just had this huge demographic bulge, which is what you look at if you look at the CDC numbers and you look at from, you know, April the 4th through, you know, the beginning of May. What you're looking at is the execution of about 50,000 poor people to create a number with which you can panic the normies throughout the United States and create the lockdown and the slave trading.
Yeah, and you, if you doubt the capable of doing this, Cuomo is a governor who signed a law that legalized infanticide in New York and celebrated it. So
Yeah, I mean, well, these are
this is the
just
moral
that they're.
caliber of the people that are running the
Well,
show.
it's like the de Blasio. I mean, I think the show we did on him was really a useful one because we showed his background is 100% evil. He's like three generations of just raw evil. And so when you have this and like a clear lifetime actor from with a tradition, generations of evil, now when you get to him today and you see the city, I mean, New York is basically a ghost town. I mean, this one individual was able to destroy perhaps the greatest city ever to have existed. It is a ghost town. I mean, if you look at like the videos now people are sending out, there's not even Times Square has no human activity. It's just gone. And yet he's spending like and violence, of course, is through the roof. He's got 30 police guarding his Black Lives Matter sign that he painted on the street in front of Trump Tower.
Yeah. Why the
Well, that's big.
homicide rate skyrockets in New York.
Yeah, I mean, gee, Bill de Blasio, have you noticed that the city has been destroyed, and you're worried about painting on a road?
Yeah,
So,
he's using basically the roads, the thoroughfares, New York, which belong to everybody. He's using it for cheap political sloganeareing. You know.
well, I mean, the thing is, we're being set up. I mean, they're setting up this Trump versus, I mean, whoever, Biden or Biden's corpse, you know, as like a powerful dialectic where, you know, democracy is really real, you know, just so real. It's like Trump versus Hillary, you know, the world depends upon who wins the presidential election. But you know, if you look at Trump, I mean, and I'm sure you read Rappaport's column, we talked about it before the show started. I mean, Trump, if he was really defending the Constitution as he took the oath to do, he would send the military in and arrest these potentates. I mean, they should be arrested immediately. There is no doubt if he was a legitimate president, he would send in the troops and get these guys in jail tomorrow. But he is not. He's just working to create this idea that there is some sort of democracy that, you know, we need to pay attention to. The democracy we need to pay attention to is the stronghold. You need to be where people are actually defending the Constitution and just forget everything else.
Well, I mean, Rappaport was correct. He said he should look at the situation as the country's been invaded now, and these are occupied areas. And these governors, I think, are part of a network long established to carry out this very operation, destabilize, carry out a. You talked about the, you know, sort of the colored revolution here in the United States by dismantling and sort of overseeing a controlled demolition of the U.S. economy. It's been performed at the state level in complete violation of their very state constitutions and the U.S. Constitution. When Governor Cuomo says he's going to impose a quarantine on New York for anyone coming in from a state. He doesn't have the power to do that. That's a violation of the Commerce Clause. You can't do that. But they're claiming these vague dictatorial powers based on a bogus, you know, a pandemic. They don't even have the numbers to cite to even justify any extreme measures. But now it's like test results. We're supposed to be terrified by test results. Which is even accurate.
The test they should be doing is a thermometer. Mm-hmm. If someone has a fever, yeah, okay. You've got to wait till your fever's gone. But everyone else is asymptomatic by definition. You don't even have any evidence that they can spread some kind of viral infection.
Well, recent Rappaport says to do a carry out a measure like this, yeah, it does invite, you know, it does sort of create the specter of dictatorship, a military dictatorship. But what do you have in these various states? They're all little dictators. You know, and what agency or political organization is there to challenge these people? I mean,
Tim, here in California, Newsom just shut down all schools, public and private. They're shut down. I mean, if you're a private school, you can open. But if you have one COVID test, he sequesters the entire school for 14 days. I mean, so no one is going to go against that.
And it's based on a perceived threat that doesn't, well, that just, it's not even there.
On March the 5th, Newsom said that, you know, 25 million Californians would come down with COVID. And he was indicating that there would be, you know, half of them would die or something. It would be massive sickness. There is nothing even to talk about. Mm-hmm. And yet he's going to these extreme dictatorial measures when there is no curve even to flatten, in fact, because even under the worst case, the death rates would be, you know, very, very small, like a normal flu basically in California. But there is no analysis given to the public about what will be the consequences, right, of not having schools for children. I mean, will there be a rise in suicide? Will there be a rise in breaking up of marriages? Will there be children left unattended, right? Because a lot of people are poor and they don't really have the capacity to watch the kids and the way their lives work. They go off to work and drop the kid off at public school and pick him up on the way back. Where is the analysis of the death and misery that's going to be caused? Because if it was out there, if people could look at it, then even the normie with the mask on would realize they're being pranked.
Well,
this isn't even daycare. It's just being pranked.
Yeah, daycare is not a problem anymore because no one's employed. You know, how many people are unemployed in Los Angeles now?
Everybody.
You know, it's, you know, and not,
there's hardly. I mean, there was they had tried to. You know, there was businesses that were going to reopen, but then last week Newsom then shut down. You know, the whole category of businesses, you know, hair salons, indoor eating, all that got shut down. So what's kind of interesting is, like, in terms of hair salon and exercise, is that there's a black market that's occurring. People who do, like, hair work will come to people's houses.
Yeah.
And just charge them a little bit extra. And then I know that there are illegal exercise classes now that are, you know, set up in people's basements.
Like speakeasies, right?
Yeah, like speakeasies.
So it'll be like fighting over mob. Like that. Yeah, gangs will be fighting over territory control of, you know, gyms, illegal gyms. And
yeah. So it's just a mess. And,
you try to explain this to, like, the normies that, you know, everyone's talking about how will they manage the debt bubble? How will they get out of this? Well, you know, Richard Salente would say, or Gerald Salente rather, would say that, you know, they'd start a war to liquidate the debt. Well, in essence, we've gotten that now with this controlled demolition of the economy, because they've been able to kind of pop the debt bubble with the lockdown, because they were able to, you know, or engineer these multi-trillion-dollar bailouts of Wall Street. At the same time, they crash the economy so that it doesn't create a run on the dollar, because the whole industrialized West is shut down simultaneously. But they've created the austerity that's been long since acknowledged necessary to bring about, you know, this great conversion or global reset, which they're openly talking about next year. And at some point, you look at it and say, "Oh, okay." And I've told people, is just the fact you even have an organization like the World Economic Forum, where the world's wealthiest people to get together and to decide that the future of the global economy, well, what does that imply? It means they're not going to go to legislation and get laws passed to convince the people to follow policies which they think are best for their interest and maybe for the world. No, they're going to create the conditions necessary where they can get their policies implemented by changing the objective conditions on the ground. That is, you're immiserating, impoverishing the people. That's to get the global reset, get them begging for something. And that's, you've collapsed the currencies, collapsed the economies. Then the people will be so desperate they'll accept any reform if it comes in the form of a promised, universal basic income, a stipend or something, so you're not starving to death. But they've created the conditions. Not like these conditions existed, outside what they're doing. They created the conditions. It's problem, reaction, solution, and they openly talk about it. But people yet seem to think that, no, it's these things are just happening. It's those rascally, liberal, stupid liberal Democrats who don't know how to do things, and this is weak Republicans, and we just need to, get the right person elected. It's far beyond that.
It is, and the fact that we are in the middle of an operation is such a good explanatory power in terms of what is our reality. Because when you look at the seemingly disparate events of the Black Lives Matter Antifa protests and the bizarre economic lockdown for COVID, they well, how did they, somehow coexist? But if you look at them as history unfolding, it makes no sense. But if you look at them as related to one another, then it makes perfect sense, because you can see that with the rioting and the violence, the possibility of reopening the white-owned small businesses in the city was just completely gone, right? So this is, you can see how the relationship, as you move toward the complete wipeout of the U.S. economy, and of course, then you have the reset, which will be followed by the social credit electronic cash system and world dictatorship.
There's already, I mean, we've talked about this before, but how it goes to show how the whole COVID thing was more or less a media hologram is that the moment the riots and the protests broke out in late May and throughout June, for about 3 or 4 weeks, the media stopped talking about COVID, and it went away as a concern. And the entire political class media was focused on Black Lives Matter protests, the statues coming down, defund the police, all these reforms, reimagining policing, reimagining the economy. Then that kind of simmers down. Now we're back to COVID. And then now this is a concern again. And now people don't have an attention span. They have short memories. They realize, well, wait a second, now that's all about test, test, tests. And, back in March and April, it was supposedly hospitals being overwhelmed. Well, which is it? And it's just a good show. If the media stops talking about it, it goes away. It's
Yeah.
not real.
It just, one thing that's been amazing to me is how they were able to orchestrate the systemic racism as like the number one problem on the planet virtually overnight. I mean, I get like a utility bill because I'm late with my gas payment. It starts out, 400 years of systemic racism have
I go online at my
been
bank and there's a
unequal
message.
distribution of gas services. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, I went online at my bank and there's a message about George Floyd at my bank.
I mean, so the thing is, it's just been
What?
extraordinary how they were able to, in one click of the clock, just go every single person, and in the system of propaganda, all went from the COVID to the focus on systemic white racism, which nobody really talks about what it is and how it develops. I mean, I actually got into, basically close to, where there was going to be blows thrown with this one individual. And I was saying, look, Black Lives Matter. If Black Lives Matter, you need to do an analysis, not just an emotional reaction. What about what has been destroying Black lives? What about the Great Society programs? What about the rap music culture? What about the CIA's intrusion of like crack cocaine into the inner cities? What about outsourcing all the jobs? The problem is, you're blaming everything on these white people The white people are not the problem. The problem is you have an organization that's using you as cannon fodder. And if you don't identify that and understand what's happening, you're not going, you know, the if you look at like the autonomous zone, I mean, this is probably a pretty good model for what you can imagine happening en masse in the larger cities when they hand over the keys to the city to Black Lives Matter. I mean, they will simply collapse overnight, you know, into just chaos. There's no, because these individuals, they are bringing with them intellectually and emotionally the destruction that the secret society, who incidentally own all of the corporations that have given Black Lives Matter these billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just incredible how much money they've got. And all of these corporations, just go look at who's sitting on the boards of these corporations. It's the same people that were, you know, developing the Great Society program.
Well, yeah, a corporate-backed revolution is not a revolution. I mean, right? I mean, it's not going to... You're brought to you by the Ford Foundation, Coca-Cola, and IBM. Okay, sure.
Yeah, that's believable.
Nike shoes. But, well, what... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, but the black kids are so desperate to have some kind of sense of achievement that they're willing to buy into, like, really what is a obvious fantasy that this somehow is leading to political power for them. It's not going to have, they're not going to, at the end of this, they may take over all the homes. They may have every single condo in Manhattan. They're not going to be worth 10 cents.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. How do you keep the lights on, though?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, you know, one agent in this, all this mayhem is, of course, is one Anthony Stephen Fauci, Dr. Anthony Fauci. He is an immunologist who has served as the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, NIAID, since 1984. So he's been there for more than 36 years. Since January 2020, he has also been one of the lead members of the Trump administration's White House Corona Task Force, addressing COVID-19 pandemic in the United States. During the early stages of the pandemic, The New Yorker and New York Times described Fauci as one of the most trusted medical figures in the United States as a leading expert on infectious disease. Well, as a physician with the National Institute of Health, Fauci has served American public health in various capacities for over 50 years and has been an advisor to every president since Ronald Reagan. He has made contributions to HIV/AIDS research. That's We talk about that, his contributions to that, and other immunodeficiencies, both as a scientist and as head of the NIAID at the National Institute of Health, and from 1983 to 2002 was one of the world's most cited scientists in scientific journals. In 1968, Fauci joined the National Institute of Health as a clinical associate in the Laboratory of Clinical Investigation at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. In 1974, he became head of the clinical physiology section, and in 1980 he was appointed chief of laboratory and immunoregulation. In 1984, he became the director of NIAID as a position he still holds as of 2020. In that role, he is responsible for extensive research portfolio of basic and applied research on infectious and immune-mediated illnesses. He has turned down several offers to lead the agency's parent, the NIH, and has been at the forefront of the U.S. efforts to contend with viral diseases like HIV/AIDS, SARS, the 2009 swine flu pandemic, MERS, Ebola, and, of course, COVID-19. He played a significant role in the early 2000s in creating President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief and in driving development of biodefense drugs and vaccines following the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Fauci has made important scientific observations that contributed to the understanding of the regulation of human immune response and is recognized for his delineating the mechanisms whereby immunosuppressive agents adapt to that response. Fauci has contributed to understanding how HIV destroys the body's defenses leading to the progression of AIDS. He has outlined the mechanisms and introduction of HIV expression of endogenous cytokines. Fauci has worked to develop strategies for therapy and immune reconstitution of patients with disease, as well as for a vaccine to prevent HIV infection. That's interesting there, story there. this is Fauci according to Wikipedia. His current research is concentrated on identifying the nature of immunopathogenic mechanisms of HIV infection and the scope of the body's immune response to HIV. Fauci was one of the leading researchers during the AIDS epidemic in the early 1980s. In 1981, he heard the virus, and he and his team of researchers began looking for a vaccine or treatment for the novel virus, though they would meet a number of obstacles. Of course, they have yet to produce such a vaccine. Leading AIDS activist Larry Kramer attacked Fauci relentlessly in the media. I guess they said he was slow in approving drugs and these things. I guess they were waiting Fauci to produce some sort of cocktail that would enable them to carry on in their lifestyle, you know. They wanted to keep the party going from the '70s. Though Fauci was leading AIDS activist Larry Kramer attacked Fauci relentlessly in the media. He called him an incompetent idiot and pill pushing tool of the medical establishment. He wasn't entirely incorrect there. Fauci did not have control over the drug approval, though. Many people felt that he was not doing enough. Fauci did make an effort in the late 1980s. To reach out to the gay community in New York and San Francisco to find ways he and the NIAID could find a solution. Fauci was first admonished for his treatment of the AIDS epidemic. His work in the community was eventually acknowledged, and even Kramer, who spent years hating Fauci for his treatment of HIV/AIDS epidemic, eventually called him the only true and great hero among government officials in the AIDS crisis. Of course, with the Corona Task Force, Fauci is a member of the Corona Task Force. He said that when he was leading the task force, he said the case fatality rate for those who are infected will likely be closer to 1% than 3.4% estimated by the World Health Organization, which is 10 times the 0.1% reported rate of the seasonal flu. Fauci has been a de facto public health spokesman for the office of the president during the pandemic and a strong advocate of ongoing social distancing in the United States. Due to disagreements with Trump, Fauci has been criticized by right-wing pundits and criticized and actually received death threats, supposedly. Now he has security detail. While there have been disagreements, Trump has praised Fauci. In May 2020, political talk show host Bill Maher cautioned against lionizing Fauci, playing clips in which in late January 2020, Fauci described the coronavirus as a very low risk, and in March, there is no reason to be walking around in a mask, and only those with underlying conditions have reason to go on. Not to go on a cruise. So he's changed his tune a number of times during this thing. Fire Fauci has also been loudly chanted at anti-lockdown protests in various locations, including Florida, Texas. As a result, the White House denied Trump was firing Fauci and blamed the media for overreacting. So that's brief Dr. Fauci. He's now sort of a quasi-controversial figure, although he continues to be praised by the mainstream media. What's your take on the on Dr. Fauci?
Well, he's a lifetime actor. I don't know exactly how he was recruited. I haven't been able to do research into his family like I wanted to, because, as you know, Tim, I was on a hike in the Sierras this last week, and there was no internet reception at 9,000 feet, so we were just left to our own devices. But I would just say that, first I want to mention that the whole dialectic between Fauci and Kramer was fake, in my opinion. It was done to create the idea that the AIDS virus was real, right? And that Kramer was basically, saying that it's they're just not doing enough, they're not giving us the drugs, and Fauci was the other side of the coin. I mean, it's kind of like what we have now with Fauci basically defending something, as extremely dangerous and needing basically kind of a government lockdown. I mean, that didn't happen with AIDS, but I think that the whole structure was kind of basically the same thing. I mean, because Fauci typically, I mean, he fails upward. He's like Ferguson, the statistician who can't come up with a model that's even 1/100th of reality. And yet every time there's a, some kind of medical crisis, he's the one that the government's turned to. So Fauci completely blew HIV, which I think, where is the epidemic in the heterosexual society? If it wasn't a case of toxicity, there would have been some breakout of the disease into the heterosexual community. Didn't happen, so this was obviously mishandled. And then, of course, the various Ebola all of the different epidemics that are supposed to overwhelm, and all of the fear that has been put into us about these viruses. I mean, Fauci didn't handle any of them very well, but now, even though he's 80 years old, he's the go-to guy for the coronavirus. Makes no sense, right? Except for the idea that he is basically a shill of the government. I mean, that's or the secret society, and they have to have someone that's completely reliable. I mean, this is something that Fauci must be. Is 100% reliable in terms of the interests of the secret society. Because if someone of this celebrity and stature said, "Oh, guess what? The whole thing is fake," then you would have, real chaos. And so he had to have been selected and obviously trained, from a very early time. He comes through, basically, he's always been a government doc. His mentor is this guy, Sheldon Wolf. And Wolf, his son, said that Fauci was basically like another son inside their family, and Fauci attended the bar mitzvahs of the children. Basically Sheldon and Tony were just like one person, right? And Sheldon Wolf, he's also someone that I haven't been able to actually pinpoint, but you can see that he was the guy who, at the very early, like Senate hearings on AIDS, he would be the one who'd be brought in to give the testimony of how dangerous it is and how the government needs to put all this money in and things. So, you can think of him as a reliable shill. Fauci was at Cornell. He graduated from Cornell Medical School. And this was at the exact time that MKUltra was on campus. You had the Human Ecology Fund at that point. I haven't actually linked him into any of this, but I think, in context, it's all clear. He's been groomed from, from wherever, from his certainly during his medical studenthood as someone who would be a shill for the government. I think. If I had to bet, I would say his family's Converso. They come from Sciascia, which is a place that there was quite a bit of Converso activity. And also, the P2 Lodge scandal had individuals from this area. So I think that with a little more research, I can probably pinpoint a trajectory from Fauci's family, probably through the mafia. Or at least, that kind of a background, and then into to Brooklyn, where they, the family owned a pharmacy, Tony then went on to like Holy Cross, where he then from there he went into a medical school.
Well, he's comes from a modest immigrant family, and he made good. He's an American success story,
Report, yeah, very they
right?
made good and very good and. And so then, and Tony then he goes to work at the NIH and the offshoot, the NIH, the branch of it that studies infectious disease. And
NIAID, yeah.
yeah, that's right. And so here he is now. He's 80 years old. He looks extraordinarily young for 80. Very suspicious, if you ask me. But it is self-evident that he is a lifetime actor and a shill, because if he wasn't, you would have him at least start to question the reality of this as an epidemic. Because when you cannot look at the CDC numbers with or a perfect bell curve of mortality and still at this point in time, make the case that you have to re-lock down everything. I mean, this is like at the end of a bell curve. Whatever the lockdown could achieve has been achieved. The damage from the real boogeyman, which is the destruction of the economy, is starting to make its terror felt. And so this is obviously the time to encourage dramatically rapid reopening of all of the economies. And yet he is still, the poster child of the lockdown. So, I mean, that's Fauci. He's, as I see him, he's a lifetime actor, He's evil. The only kind of physical image that I caught of him was this one time when he was at the side of a hearing, and during it he had his hand inside his pocket, inside his coat, making, you know, the hidden hand symbol. Hard to, you know, that kind of stuff is, particularly with a single example, you know, I'm not sure what it means, but I would, you know, I would say with a little bit of work, if I had to bet it, you could find, you know, relations into the P2 Lodge and his family, and then that would be how he had been, you know, mentored by Wolf, and probably even earlier through the MK Ultra assets at Cornell when he was a doctoral student.
Well, I mean, Fauci is a fraud. I mean, they have him on camera contradicting himself, you know, on mask wearing. Where back in late February, March, he advised people not to wear masks. He gave a rather common sense reason not to. They're not effective in preventing you know, the spread of disease. People touch them, they don't use it properly. And I think this was on 60 Minutes. And then he completely reverses himself several months later without any explanation. And the question I go out is, if you talk to an expert and the expert contradicts himself without providing an explanation for that contradiction, should he still be considered an expert? You know, and this is how the layperson identifies an expert as a fraud. And so he's contradicted himself. Of course, he contradicted himself when he was on either Meet the Press or Face the Nation, where he gave, you know, the number 200,000 dead Americans. But then at the New England Journal of Medicine, he said it was, the death rate would be similar to that of the seasonal flu at the same, roughly the same time, I think within several weeks of one another. So, and then he's never called to account for that contradiction. Obviously, because not many people are going to read the New England Journal of Medicine article, but they are going to watch or hear about his appearance on Face the Nation or Meet the Press, because it's a TV appearance. So he's pushing the propaganda there. He himself has accepted studies or projections, I think the mortality projections, from institutions created by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And he himself has accepted, his own institute has accepted tens of millions of dollars from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. There's a conflict of interest there. You don't hear much about that in the press. He is interesting because he talked about in that Wikipedia piece, it talked about how he's been an important figure in dealing with the various pandemics over the years that have all fizzled. Even this one, yeah. Really, the reality of it, but it's been a bigger propaganda campaign. But the swine flu pandemic, which was a fake pandemic, which was covered by Cheryl Atkinson at CBS News, which John Rappaport writes about, which then was covered up. The CBS News didn't cover it. It was only covered on CBS News Online, how they were faking the swine flu pandemic. They stopped counting swine flu cases because they weren't getting any. Then they doubled down a few weeks later and said there were 22 million Americans with swine flu. It turns out that it was fake. It was fake so the pharmaceutical company could get, pharmaceutical industry could get European countries to buy billions of dollars worth of vaccines. And that, and so he was involved in that previous fake pandemic. Again, not much is that's not talked about in the mainstream press, so it's never happened. But his research regarding AIDS, at least his work with the AIDS, is particularly telling. There's an article here written by by F.Y. Mangdahl. It's a piece he wrote back in April called "The Remarkable Dr. A. Fauci," and he's talking about the AIDS, his involvement in AIDS research. He says, let's go back to 1984 when Fauci was named head of the NIAID during the Reagan era. That year, an AIDS researcher, Robert Gallo, working under Fauci, held a press conference to announce that he had discovered the AIDS virus. He said it was an HIV, human immunodeficiency virus. The shocking announcement, which went around the world, was in complete disregard of scientific procedure of prior peer-reviewed published scientific evidence, including the required electron microscope analysis. It was the case of science by press conference, as a critical scientist, Professor Peter H. Duesberg described it. Fauci and Gallo claimed that AIDS was a highly contagious, also by sexual transmission, especially among homosexual men. Notably, before the Gallo claim to have found the HIV/AIDS virus, the NIAID had been doing research on the role of drugs, poppers, and nitrites, proven immune suppressants in the deaths of the earliest AIDS patients. That was quickly dropped in favor of researching a cure for AIDS. Media was told that AIDS was the public health threat of the century. Gallo went on to make millions on his patent blood test for HIV, despite the fact that the test was often giving false positives. Gee, that's that sound familiar.
Right. Yeah.
And did not test directly for the alleged virus. Again, same thing with today's test. But for active antibodies, something immunology practice said was not valid, as antibodies merely suggested a past infection response and not necessarily a presence of AIDS. At this time, in the 1980s, Fauci was responsible for AIDS research at the NID, a post he still holds. While a frightened world was clamoring for a test, Gallo and Fauci promoted their deeply flawed test of antibodies. In 2006, Gallo claimed HIV tests were highly accurate from the time they were developed in 1984 and have become much more accurate over time. Highly accurate in 1984, but more accurate than highly over time. Gallo added in response to the criticism, a PCR test for the presence of the virus itself can accurately determine a child's HIV status. In a sharp rebuttal of the Gallo claim, claims endorsed by Fauci and AID, as well as CDC, Robert A. Giraldo, MD, and Etienne de Harvin, MD, the scientist who produced the first electron micrograph of a retrovirus, pointed out that both ELISA and Western blot and the genetic test for PCR or viral load test, the two major tests used to determine if one has AIDS, are invalid. None of these tests detect the HIV virus itself, nor do they detect HIV particles. They add that there are more than 70 different documented conditions that can cause antibody tests to react positive without an HIV infection. Keep that in mind. Among the false positive cases are the influenza, the common cold, leprosy, or the existence of pregnancy. The same tests are used today to determine SARS-CoV-2 positive. Think about that. They concluded that the fact that after 25 years of intense research, HIV has been neither isolated nor purified in terms of classical virology indicates to us that the infectious view of AIDS as a contagious viral disease is based on an apparently non-existent microbe. Yet this fraud has shaped the career of Tony Fauci for more than 35 years. Fauci, as head of NIAID, has taken millions of dollars from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation as well as the Clinton Foundation, along with tens of billions from U.S. taxpayers for his bogus research. Despite the fact that he knew the established rules of virology, Fauci, as head of the NID, recommended the Burroughs Wellcome chemotherapy drug AZT as a preventative drug for AIDS-diagnosed patients, even without symptoms. These are people who weren't even sick, and he put them on chemotherapy drugs. Burroughs Wellcome gave NID the study that was deliberately biased for AZT, so the pharmaceutical company gave Fauci the test that showed that it should be used. Conflict of interest? Fauci even backed AZT for pregnant women, despite the grave risk to the fetus. One mark of pregnancy in all women is the higher level of antigens as the natural immune system fights any infections to protect the fetus. AZT or Retrovir, a failed leukemia drug, as has been proven to be highly a highly toxic drug. It was approved for AIDS testing in record 5 days by Fauci and the U.S. government in 1987. Today, despite more than 30 years of funded research and billions of dollars, no effective vaccine for HIV/AIDS exists. Now, here, this is particularly interesting here. According to the people who have studied the role of Tony Fauci as head of NIAID, his focus has been what is called scientific reductivism, described as a 19th-century-style single-germ theory for a complex web of factors that collapsed the immune systems of the subset of gay men in the early 1980s. He has refused to explore the documentation that a variety of lethal drugs and other toxins, such as nitrates, could play a role. As a result, he has wasted tens of billions of taxpayers' dollars since 1984 on a dead-end experiment. One of his most nefarious was his collaboration with Gilead Sciences. Not satisfied with having developed a false positive test for AIDS and having gained FDA fast-track approval for AZT to treat HIV-positive patients with serious illness symptoms, Fauci decided to collaborate with Gilead on what came to be called the PrEP experiment. Fauci, in 2007, began to finance clinical trials for the AZT drugs in HIV-negatives on a theory that the chemotherapy would protect them from becoming positive. That is, testing toxic HIV drugs and otherwise healthy persons to ensure they never get AIDS. If it sounds mad, it was. Gilead supplied the drug Truvada to the NIAID between 2007 and 2012 for phase 3 human tests on HIV negative subjects. 4 tests of at least 2,000 to 5,000 test subjects each were done. The project was called pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP. Healthy subjects were given doses of chemotherapy drug Truvada on the thesis it could prevent them from one day getting HIV positive. CDC in its May 2014 recommendation urged physicians to describe Truvada for negatives to the so-called risk groups, an official government imprimatur for an extremely profitable drug. Now, these are people who aren't sick. He's giving them chemotherapy drugs. This is so they can provide some sort of prophylactic cocktail so they can continue to engage in their high-risk behavior, which is ultimately the source of their health problems if they come sick, if they happen to become ill because of their immune systems collapsing due to their high rate of drug intake, abuse, whatever, their lifestyles. And so instead of advising these patients to be healthy, I practice preventative medicine and say you shouldn't be behaving this way. Of course, you don't want to do that because that would be moral. He's using them as guinea pigs for this chemotherapy drug. This is the guy directing our response to the supposed COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah, and you can just see he's completely absurd. I mean, he's an obvious lifetime actor. I mean, these are operations to weaken us and to ultimately destroy us, and he's just basically a suit and a smile to try to put a happy face on the whole thing and a little bit of scientism. But in just in the same way that Fauci shows how fake he is by his refusing to either talk about the collapse of the mortality numbers in COVID or the economic destruction that has caused far more misery and death than anything this virus could ever do. You can see he was fake going all the way back into the late 70s, early 80s, when he never talked about lifestyle. I mean, you go through his responses to HIV, and it's all, well, there's a virus, and we're going to have to come up with a vaccine or some drugs, and this is the only thing. I mean, anyone who had just any awareness of America in the late 70s, early 80s, knew that the gay lifestyle was 100% destructive. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was 100% destructive. I've mentioned that.
Do we have to get graphic?
Yeah, I won't get graphic, but I will say that I had people who I knew very well who were gay, and they would basically take antibiotics every day of the year because this was how they could keep the syphilis and the gonorrhea and the other STDs down, and it was like a health tonic that was basically, it wasn't even about HIV. It was about all of the other sexually transmitted diseases, you see? So that was going on, just normal behavior, good hygiene for gay men at this point in the 70s and early 80s. And yet when Fauci, would talk about the collapse of their health, this wasn't brought up. And my point is, this obviously is fake. If you stand back at it and just kind of, think of the broad strokes, it's completely fake. There's nothing, medically oriented about this individual. He is just, Fauci is simply a propaganda device. And you mentioned how he's flipping and flopping. At one point it's no mask, then it's mask, it's a high death rate, it's a low death rate. I mean, what you're looking at is a propaganda device engaging in incrementalism. Incrementalism is extremely important to the secret society in this operation, because if they, basically had told us that we would be sitting here on, and in the middle of July, locked down, and at the same time said, yeah, but there's been only like 100,000 people who died, but half of those, in fact, were actually had flu and pneumonia, and 95% of the others were ancient people who had COVID. But if they had actually brought that reality to the American people and said, and we're going to lock the economy down, there would have been a revolution. So this is being handled through incrementalism. It's one small cut at a time so that you just get used to things like mask wearing, mm-hmm. like you can't go to church, like the schools don't open. And then soon they're going to want us to get used to, well, there's no food. You see, because
reimagining things. It's the new normal. It's the great reset. And this is what they talk about at Davos. It's an opportunity to implement all these changes that are otherwise not be acceptable. And they only do it by collapsing everything first. And that's what they've done gradually with these measures. And again, first it was flattening the curve, dubious, you know, that was a dubious claim at the time, but that within weeks became the new normal. And now it's mandatory vaccines being discussed, and it's contact tracing, which is 24/7 monitoring, and it's quarantining, which is basically unlawful, you know, detention without any due process. And it's, no business is going to, you can't go out and earn a living. And at what point are people going to keep accepting this? It's something to behold. Are people, okay, well, they're just looking out for us. And isn't it clear that the governors, Cuomo, Newsom, Mullins, even Abbott in Texas, they're just malevolent. I mean, it's awful.
They're malevolent right down into their toenails. This is a society. This is a society that has a very clear agenda of genocide, and they have been able to slither into all the political positions they need and enough media structure so that they can then just weave this web of deception and have us walk merrily into slave camps and into starvation. And, the only hope we have is that the alternative media the independent media can get enough people to realize that this is an extinction level event for us, for the white people. We are on the chopping block. And, we have to develop strongholds. I mean, I've been asked in the last week about, well, what to do, and I'm saying, well, I won't give the circumstances of these families, but the cities that they were in are not tenable, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, if you're interested in my advice, here it is. Pick a place where you can trust the sheriff, pick a place where you can trust the mayor, and if possible, pick a place you can trust the governor to be someone who actually is going to defend the Constitution. Move there. That's where you're safe. And when you're there, you need to start speaking up about the need to defend the Constitution. Everyone who runs away should also bring with them the awareness of what has happened in the places, that they came from. We have, like, in where I live, we have a lot of, like, wealthy people from New York City moving in. And they come in and basically just want to hide. That's why they're here. They're hiding. They want to be away from, what they were afraid of in New York City. But I've had a chance to chat up a few of them, and I'm saying, look, you really want to do a little better here in terms of citizenship than you did in New York. Because there, you basically gave up without a fight, and now look where the city is.
How about staying there and fighting?
How about staying there and fighting? Yeah. And that's what I tell people. I mean, the thing is, in some places, I think it's literally just too far gone. Like, if I was in Seattle, I've been getting some reports of what's going on in Seattle. It just seems like it's a failure of civilization.
Well, like Chicago, Atlanta.
But if there is particularly, if you have organizations that are still able to defend the Constitution, for heaven's sakes, amalgamate them. Try to become a force to physically defend yourself and the Constitution. Like here, this morning I was in the recall Governor Newsom mm-hmm. Campaign. We, just coffee table set up, and it was really very active and lively, and lots of people are starting to get it. So just keep fighting.
Well, Virginia state motto is sic semper tyrannis, and it's thus they're all tyrants, and it's a warning. And maybe if people started like hanging 100, 200 governors in effigy outside the governor mansions, outside the state capitol buildings. A message might be sent. But again, at this point, I think it's you're dealing with people that are so cynical and acting in such bad faith that you can't really reason with them. I think they're acting on a not really a secret agenda. I think it's clear, and so they have to be routed. And there's some have to find an agency for that, and you could appeal to the federal government at this point, like John Rappaport suggested, that at this point, at least that the resources there to do that and would be justified. You can't say, and one like he said, one way, yeah, it does present a threat to di dictatorship, but then any invasion does that. I mean, when you have to, like in the old Roman system, where they'd get a dictator to deal with a crisis, and then he would return power after the crisis was dealt with. This something like that has to be performed because now you're dealing with governors, I think, who are dedicated to the destruction of what remains of the United States. The Engdahl article that I read, he closes that the article with an important part here. He goes, relevant also to the fact that all scientific advisors to the U.S. President's task force on COVID-19 are tied since decades to the bogus and destructive HIV/AIDS research and propagation of false theories. Alongside Tony Fauci of NIAID stands Deborah L. Birx, MD, Obama appointee as U.S. Global Aid Coordinator, who worked under Tony Fauci at NIAID from 1983 to 1986. Robert Redfield is the current director of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, a center for the recent coronavirus testing scandal. Redfield co-founded with the discredited Robert Gallo, former Fauci colleague in the AIDS scandals of the early 1980s at NIH, the Institute of Human Virology based at the University of Maryland. Redfield and Birx also co-authored numerous scientific articles on purported HIV vaccines, none of which have been effective. Fauci, Birx, and Redfield, all incestuously complicit in the HIV/AIDS frauds and malpractice, today hold the future of not only American public health, but also of the entire world economy in their hands. Not a good situation. As their work on the proved HIV IDS fraud shows, the coronavirus tests do not at all prove the presence of a deadly virus in any patient. If this is so, it is perhaps the greatest criminal fraud in medical history. And that is great, I think, underscores Dr. Fauci's
Yeah,
career.
I'm glad. I mean, yeah, glad that he wrote that article. I think it's great. It helps wake people up. I mean, I think you need to go a lot farther and try to get people to understand that, this isn't, just a one-off. This isn't something that is, just a small collection of people who are evil or somehow have bad ideas. It's an organization that's taken over the government and the media, and so it's much more lethal than I think, Engels, the tone of the letter indicated. I mean, so this is extinction level stuff, and you really need to have a sense of urgency when you go around every single day trying to figure out exactly how to deal with this thing. The thing that the letter is good for is it gives people kind of a, just an overall sense of how corrupt things are, so that they can use that in a positive way to start waking up more people that are, in deep sleep, that are still, upset when you are outside and you're not wearing a mask and you walk past them. People like that, I mean, they are literally thought puppets that on the way to the FEMA camp. So, Engel's article's good. I'm glad you mentioned, pointed out something because he has information that everyone could take value from. But we've got to create more urgent energy, to deal with these guys. Fauci is, I mean, obviously these people are puppets, right? I mean, they're not on some kind of inner circle group coming up with these strategies. They're there to, give a happy face and some scientism so that some normies still continue to buy the narrative for as long as they possibly can. But we're going to get, if the lockdown continues and looks like, how can it not, since basically they can create new cases out of thin air anytime they
Well,
want.
yeah, Fauci himself said the crisis continues until we have zero COVID-19 cases. Test
Right,
positive.
so
That's
that's an impossible.
ridiculous.
And so
That's
therefore,
ridiculous.
yeah, so that can't happen. So
Yeah.
therefore, you're on your way to the end of the food supply, the food chain. And they can go, oh my gosh, we were trying to help you and you're starving to death. That's too bad. You know, it's like an accident. Well, it's not an accident. It is the plan. People need to basically see that there is no coherent explanation for the lockdown right now. There just isn't any. When back in March, they had, you know, some sense of terror, which they could point to and say, look, we're behaving reasonably. And then we're going to flatten the curve. Well, curve has been flattened, and in fact, in terms of the deaths, it's almost been extinguished. So why is the lockdown not just continuing but being basically ratcheted up? So we've got to start operating as a people who have been enslaved, and we have to start operating as a people who are facing starvation and complete impoverishment. So that's the kind of attitude we need to bring to every day, you know, that this is what we're dealing with.
Yeah, you have to respond to it and fight back while you still have the means and resources to present some sort of meaningful opposition and organization. You can't wait until, you know, the stores are empty. I mean,
Can't wait till you're hungry
till the lights go
because
out. Yeah.
then you'll have other problems. No, right now is the time. And so just, you know, be as bold as you can. They will play down all the demonstrations. I mean, obviously, Black Lives Matter will, you know, get the publicity. But if there is enough response, you know, that you start basically making it difficult for the politicians to appear in public, I think that, you know, you can we can at some point there'll just be an overwhelming case that even like the most thought puppeted normie will get. That look, they're not operating in our interests. They are a secret society. They are there to try to destroy us.
Well,
We've got
yeah.
to change the political class immediately.
These agents of discord, of destruction, are human beings. They have addresses. They can be found. And I'm not suggesting anything specific, but life, let's just say life needs to be made difficult for them for the decisions they are doing, for what they're implementing, because what they're doing is absolute evil. And,
It is
you
equal,
know.
and it's basic. I mean, you know, my position is the government is illegitimate.
Yes, at this
The
point, yeah, like I don't look at,
vehicle,
there's no
I mean,
legitimate,
when they lock down the economy, and if you're in Philadelphia, and your business is shut down, and the mayor says, you know, you cannot assemble or go to church, but Black Lives Matter can, my position would be, every man for himself at this point. There
complete,
is no social contract.
yeah.
I don't have any. Basically, requirement to behave in any way inside this legal structure. I can do whatever I have to do to defend myself.
Yeah, and it's arbitrary, capricious. There's no, you have no basis for these rules, and screw you. And
Yeah,
that, yeah. I
right.
mean, at this point, compliance is violence, as they say. You know,
Yeah, to
yeah.
yourself.
If you comply to
So.
this stuff and just don't comply with it, and you know, that's just why mind control is so important.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's how they're able. If they can keep enough of the people numb, it will make it more difficult for the people who are aware to act out because there's a sense of intimidation and of, you know, and so that's the thing is that you need the, you know, the sense of a group that you're with in order to really be bold. And that's this is, you know, I think what we want to try to achieve is brotherhood and sisterhood. Go forward, you know, and just try to. And again, like getting back to like the advice I mentioned, people have to get out of their cities. Go to some place where you can basically believe that there is the Constitution being defended by the elected representatives, and then make that area a stronghold. Make it a stronghold. Make everyone even more aware of what they have to do to preserve, you know, freedom in this area
Okay.
because they're going to be under attack.
Everyone should move to South Dakota then, right?
Yeah. Well, or Georgia.
Yeah. So, okay, Joe.
Okay, buddy. Yeah, thanks. Good talk, and we'll get them next week.
Good night. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.